Daisy.
And I'm Terry.
And this is the Monday Mindset Podcast,
where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 202. And I am full of snot and a cold, but Terry, hopefully you've got something better for us today. What do you have?
I do think I have something a little better than phlegm. So let's go ahead and jump in here. I was very excited as I was preparing for this episode. You know, Daisy, that I just got back from vacation and this week has been really hectic. So I needed something short that I could share. But I was very excited to find something that not only was really short, but it's something that I already have background training in. And so it just really kind of lined up well for me personally and professionally, and I think something of real value to many of our listeners. So when I was a psychologist in private practice, of course, a lot of people come to therapy for couples therapy. That was the bane of my existence. I did not like doing couples therapy, so I never advertised for it, and I very rarely accepted couples. It is hard, hard work.
I can imagine that being tricky. Oh. I've only ever seen it in, you know, things like dramas and read it in books, but It always sounds super uncomfortable.
It is very complicated. But as a psychologist, you have to continually do new educational experiences to get credits every, you know, couple of years to renew your license. And so one of the years I took a big course from two experts in the field of couples therapy, the Gottmans.
I thought you were going to say that.
They are amazing. What they teach is amazing. It's so applicable. And way back in my history, early on in a relationship, we went to couples therapy and a therapist said, you too need to be reading this book. So I had been reading some Gottman books way back, you know, 20 years ago, maybe. So I came across an episode of Quick Brain with Jim Quick, and it is called The Art of Arguing, Using Disagreements to Deepen Your Relationships with Julie and John Gottman. I thought, oh, bingo, this is it. So I wanted to just share a couple of things from this. And obviously, because it's a short episode, they really can't cover everything, but they cover some really key things to be thinking about. And they do have a new book out called Fight Right, because much of their work around couples therapy and helping couples is really about how you argue, what your argument style is. Because what they found is that they have what they call the four horsemen of the apocalypse of relationships, and that is contempt, defensiveness, stonewalling, and criticism. And couples that have these four horsemen present generally end their relationship within 6 years. That is how predictive these things are.
Yeah.
And they have studied over 40,000 couples. So it's not like they've talked to a couple of people. This is a very detailed research that they do. What they are focusing on is getting rid of these four horsemen, not engaging in those ways, which many of us have learned to do just naturally. Be defensive, do the silent treatment, belittle the other person and expect that that's going to make them change their behavior. You know, all of these things. So what they really focused on in this conversation, and I assume then in this book, is that really you can use the conflict to help deepen your relationship, not end your relationship or be miserable in your relationship. What they found is that couples who don't go to that contemptuous, defensive type, critical type of communication do so much better and have more satisfying relationships long term. And one of the things they highlighted is this is not just important information for people early on in that first 6 years. You could be in your relationship for 20, 25 years already and still need to learn more about your partner, need to deepen that connection so that you don't stay at that surface level of disagreements and arguments. So as I mentioned, they have a research place set up. It's in Seattle or somewhere around the Seattle area in the state of Washington. And what they do is they bring in couples and they record them. They, you know, watch these videos and they watch how these people argue. What happens when a disagreement comes up? And so they don't just say, hey, let's talk about all the things you guys love together, but let's bring up some of these hot topics. Years ago, they started doing this research where they actually hooked people up to sensors so they could test their heart rate, they could test palm sweating, they could watch, physical movements, you know, someone who's twitching in their chair the whole time or getting up and walking around. So they really could monitor these physiological signs of arousal. And so they could see when conflict was happening and as this arousal increased, what consequence that had for the person themselves and the couple. So again, this is not just theoretical. They've really watched this in action. And one of the things that they highlighted in this episode was that the first 3 minutes of conflict or of an argument really predicts how the rest of that conversation is going to go. With about 96% accuracy, they could predict how this argument is going to end just based on the first 3 minutes. And interestingly, also predicts the success of the relationship 6 years later.
Wow.
Because they follow up. They keep ongoing data with these folks.
I can believe that. That it's set by, well, I don't know, find out, but I bet a lot of it is set by how it's brought up in the first place.
That's right. And so how do many of us make mistakes in this? We start the conflict, the argument, the discussion with a criticism of the other person. You are so lazy. I can't believe you can't just shut the cabinet doors when you get your coffee cup. I'm so sick of seeing that door open. That person is not going to be able to engage with you now and resolve this. And you're not in a place that you can resolve it when you've already started with this. So like you said, those first opening lines set up the whole discussion that is to come. So if I start with criticism, I start with, you know, defensiveness, why this isn't my fault, why you're such a bad partner, I'm already blocked from, you know, resolving this with you. And you're blocked from hearing what I'm going to say, because now what are you most likely to do? Defend? Or I think the right word might be capitulate. You just give in to whatever I say, hoping I'll shut up and stop this argument. So first 3 minutes, most important. And everyone is probably familiar with this, but she still highlights it in this episode. It's highlighted in every book they've ever written, that you really want to start with the sharing what you feel, what the situation is, and then basically how your partner can shine, how they can improve this, how they can help, how they can alleviate you feeling this complicated feeling. So for example, I'm annoyed that the kitchen is a mess. And then the next thing you'd want to do is share how your partner could kind of fix this. So I'm wondering if you would be willing to, before you leave the kitchen after you've made a snack or a meal, if you would just check and make sure everything's put away and the counter's cleaned off and the cupboards are shut. So I'm annoyed. Share your feeling. What is the situation? The kitchen's a mess. And here's what I'm asking. Here's the action step. And again, hopefully you heard in the way I said it, none of it was critical of that person. You do this every time. I'm so sick of you doing it. It doesn't come like that. I'm annoyed. That's hard enough to hear for the other person. Because this has happened, and here's what I'm asking. So if people can really start to practice that, and again, I know we've all learned it, but we often forget. The other thing I want to just say real quickly is I don't think this is only for couples. Mm. Parents could use this with their kids. You can use this with your friend. You can use this with your boss, your colleagues. You know, these are relational tools, not just romantic partnership tools. So I think that's really important.
When you're also not making a demand there at the end.
That's right.
The way it was phrased seems so important. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to do this? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what happens if someone turns around and says, well, no. But, you know, that's another thing to discuss, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you're not saying, I'm demanding that you do this to stop me being annoyed.
Yeah.
Saying, yeah, this makes me annoyed. This is the situation. would you be willing to do X, Y, and Z so that that doesn't happen to me again?
And then I think you highlighted something really important there. There is going to be more of this discussion. They're not just going to say yes and it's done. They may say, ah, I can do this part, but I really don't think I could do that part. Okay, now neither of us are escalated and we can keep going. All right, well, if you'd be willing to at least put everything away and wipe off the counters, I can overlook the cabinets. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be more kind of negotiating that happens.
Till you get into a negotiation stage.
That's right. Yeah. The other thing that they really highlighted, again, this was a very brief episode, but what they highlighted is that this is where the relationship can actually be deepened because you can learn something about the person. Like, you might be able to say, I'm confused. Tell me what happens when you walk out of the kitchen. And they're like, well, I'm just thinking about the next thing. I'm busy and I don't think about what's on the counter. Oh, now I don't just think they're being a jerk. I realize they have something else going on. And then that, again, might be part of how we resolve this. Okay, well, would you be willing to come back after you complete that next task and now clean up the kitchen? I could hold off for an hour if the kitchen's a mess. I just can't have the kitchen be a mess for 3 days after you made your snack. So you get to learn more about the person. You also, and they shared some examples, you get to learn maybe where that behavior comes from them. An example in my relationship is I am highly sensitive to sounds. And I don't know how this really developed. I have some assumptions about how it developed, but don't slam the door. Don't let the door slam on its own. Pause and carefully shut the door so there's almost no audible sound. Well, 90% of people I hang out with, they slam the doors, they let the door slam, and that's very triggering for me. So if my partner and I are kind of getting into an issue about that, it would be really helpful for them to know, I'm not just being a jerk, I am triggered at a core level. I learned at a young age that things should not make loud sounds. And when I hear loud sounds, I was the kid who, we used to go listen to fireworks out on the Chesapeake Bay, and I would duck under the seat of the boat during the fireworks. I didn't like the big boom. I don't like those big sounds. So it'd be really helpful for someone to understand, I'm not just being picky. I'm not just being critical. I am physiologically triggered when that noise happens. Would you be willing to practice not slamming the door? So again, this is an opportunity to deepen the relationship, not just get through the conflict or not just ignore the conflict.
Yeah, and it's that not having a certain level of expectation, asking for the willingness. And also, I think the important word there was practice. Would you be willing to work on this, basically, is also saying, I'm not expecting you to be able to flip a switch and instantly be doing what I want tomorrow. It's going to take a bit of time.
Absolutely.
You know, like we've discussed about changing your vocabulary around problematic words. It's not something that many people anyway can do instantly. It takes a bit of work and there's that transition period.
That's right.
And knowing that somebody's going to be patient during that time, again, would you be willing to practice that? Would you be willing to work on it? Gives you an opening, isn't it?
And gives you an opportunity to give positive reinforcement when they do it. So the next time the door was ready to slam and the person said, oh, and quietly shut it, they say, thank you, I really appreciate that. So you get to give positive feedback as well. So now this conflict situation that comes up every day stops being a conflict situation. So Jim Quick, of course, was very interested in, well, how is the brain involved here? You know, how can we look at what's going on with the brain? And John Gottman then shared, when people are autonomically aroused, and again, this was from all of their research for many years in collecting this kind of data about signs of arousal. When people are autonomically aroused over a 3-year period, their relationship deteriorates. Because in those moments, you activate cortisol and you go into the fight or flight. You're not listening now. You can't negotiate. You can't reason at this point. You're shut off. And it has a toll on you physiologically and the relationship and the other person. So let's say, for example, I'm in a relationship and all I do is criticize. That other person hearing that criticism all the time puts them in that aroused state or a shut down, cut off state, which obviously is not going to be good for them or the relationship. So recognizing that the physiological arousal of this has really negative impacts for us physically and for the relationship. So then they talked a little bit more about this and what they refer to, and many people may be familiar with, of being flooded. And he gave a quick example of like, well, how do you know if you're, you know, flooded, emotionally flooded? He said, well, if you just get louder, good sign you're probably already flooded. You just keep shouting louder or getting, raising your voice. And she said, you know, if you keep repeating the same thing, thinking that if maybe if I say it 3,000 times, they will then agree with me, good sign that you're probably flooded. So the most important thing with this is they talked about you need to take a break. And so if I recognize I'm flooded or if you recognize I'm flooded, we need to agree to take a break. But this is where a lot of people, again, they have the good intention of taking the break, but they don't do it in an effective way. What they often do is they just say, never mind, we're not going to talk about this anymore. They just cut off from it. That's not taking a break. Taking a break is actually taking time out to bring your arousal system down, to calm the system. So Julie Gottman mentioned this break should be no shorter than 20 to 30 minutes, but no longer than 24 hours. And what should you do during this break? Now, naturally, some of us are going to think during that break, I should write out or really devise my argument, really come up with all of my things I want to tell this person. No, that's not it. This break is actually to be used to get out of that heightened arousal state. So do some yoga, do some meditation, listen to something, go for a walk, do something that's going to bring your heart rate down. Get rid of that cortisol spike so that you can then engage about this difficult topic and you're not at this flooded stage. And the last big thing that they talked about is what they call the bagel method or the donut method. They said, depending on where you live or what your cultural background is. And when you are in kind of conflict state, you're having to make a decision together, let's say, take a big piece of paper and make an inner circle and an outer circle. So, you know, you can picture it. It's a bagel or it's a donut. In the inner circle, you write down, each person writes down their non-negotiables. This I cannot not have, or I cannot do, you know, this is the non-negotiable. And then in the outer circle, you write all of the ways that you could compromise. Well, I could do it if we did it at this time. I'd be willing for us to have this as long as so-and-so does this. Like these are the compromise places. They said that this bagel method is really an important way to help people achieve compromise and again, create a deeper understanding of your partner. People cannot compromise if they feel like it requires giving up something that is central to their identity. And this is why this method is so important. If I want you to compromise to match my needs, but I'm asking you to change something that is central to your being, it's like, hey, Daisy, can you just take out one of your ribs for me? That's not going to work. So she gives an example of a couple facing their decision about what where they're going to live in retirement. And the husband wants to go live on a sailboat and sail the world. And the wife wants a farm in Iowa. Well, you can't sail the world while living on a farm in Iowa. And you can't farm in Iowa while on a... So they had to come up with a compromise. And so they did the bagel method and they figured out what, you know, he was not willing to never get to live on a sailboat. And she was not willing to never get to live on a farm in Iowa. So they had to come up with a compromise. So what they did is they got the boat. They went on it for a year, knowing that at the end of the year, they were coming back to the farm in Iowa and they were going to live there for a year. Now, they didn't have to plan, we're going to do that forever, but they at least knew for now, you're going to get something you need, I'm going to get something I need, and then we'll have more information. We'll see how that works for us. Maybe we start doing it on a 6-month rotation or a longer rotation, something like that. But it's a great way to honor the other person's non-negotiables and work out something that doesn't feel like someone having to give up in order to compromise. You're both getting what you need. Because again, if one person just pushes their agenda and the other just feels like they have to keep giving up and giving up and giving up, that's not actually compromise.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And the phrase that came to my mind was something that you hear people saying as part of a couple, part of a partnership, that they try their best to never go to sleep on an argument.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about that timing thing, that, you know, time out, time to cool down, but that you've got to come back to it. And it just made me think of that. It also made me think of episodes we've had where the benefits of going out and walking for 5 minutes for various things. That's another thing that came to mind. Yeah, you've just got to drop yourself out of one physiological state into a state where you can actually negotiate. And I thought it was interesting, just back to where you started, you know, the art of arguing, fighting right, and it being about conflict resolution. And it must be such an important part. I'm so unfamiliar with what it's like to be part of a couple, so I'm only guessing here. But disagreements, or things that you don't agree on, things that you differ, parts of your personality that differ, whatever it is, there are going to be things that are conflicting, presumably for everybody in every couple. And I guess if you're thinking of an argument as a conflict resolution, a way to resolve a conflict, if that's your end game, rather than just venting, rather than getting it out of your system, rather than airing grievances, whatever it is, if you're heading into an argument wanting to resolve it in some way, that probably helps.
And I think an important thing to think about with that is resolving a conflict doesn't mean being right. And I think that's the way a lot of us have learned to kind of think about how we're going to fix a conflict. I'm going to be proven right. This person is going to agree with me. And wow, everything's going to be great. That's actually not how conflicts get resolved. And this wasn't in this episode, but I know this from my previous reading and studying with them. Over 2/3 of conflicts have no resolution, meaning there isn't a solution to the content. One person likes leaving their dirty socks on the floor and the other person can't stand dirty socks. There's no solution for that.
There's a compromise.
There's a compromise. But where I think is so important about this whole topic is resolving the content of conflicts. That's where the 2/3 don't get resolved. So looking more at the process of how you have conflict, because it's going to happen. And couples who don't have conflict, actually, that's not necessarily a positive thing. So to think about process over content, rather than I need to be right, I want to stay connected. Rather than my way has to be the right way or the highway, how can we work with this long term, even though we have very different views of it? I'm not going to make this person take my view. They're not going to get me to take their view. How are we going to do the process around this content for the rest of our relationship? So process over content, I think, is really important in that concept of conflict resolution. It's not we find the right answer, which is mine. It's not that we find the right answer. It's that we find a way to have this difficult topic among us and not destroy us.
Yeah. Definitely. And I can see, like you say, there are ways you can apply this to all sorts of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Even amusingly, I was thinking to myself, I can see of ways of applying this to my relationship with my dogs, which of course it always comes back to. But as you were saying, what's critical there is considering what the other person or being is thinking, how they're thinking, where they're coming from.
That's right.
What you're aiming for is to stay connected. So there are so many ways that you could apply this and so many relationships you could apply it to.
Yep.
So yeah, very interesting.
Getting to know what makes them tick, how they're thinking and what they need.
Yeah.
So when Lila is really fighting you on something, she's not just being a jerk. She has a need, or she's thinking in a way that doesn't match how you're thinking about it. So I think that's really applicable.
I can always find a way.
That's right.
Well, before I cough my guts up, because I was having one of those coughing fits while you were talking there. You know when you start coughing and you can't stop. So yes. I'm just going to say it before I start again, that I hope you have a very wonderful week.
Take good care, everyone, and use this in any way that you can to help you in how you handle your relationships and also strengthening and deepening your relationships. And until next time, take good care.